If you're trying to figure out how to navigate the tricky tightrope of parenting while you have questions, doubts, and wonderings about your spiritual journey, our podcast is for you.
It doesn't matter if your kids are smalls, middles, or bigs. We'll explore what and how we're deconstructing from churchianity, harmful belief systems, and diving deep into the ways we can work this out in parenthood.
We're also going to work through ideas for reconstructing a space for our families to thrive under new systems of love and freedom.
We can't wait to bring you some hope that you're not alone and that it's really okay, even good, to explore all the possibilities that may have felt closed off in the past.
Our podcast is going to offer you grace and space to be exactly where you are and who you are.
We're really glad you're here, and we're excited for today's episode. Listen in.
My passion is to have a kinder and gentler world for our little people in faith spaces. Matt Shantz.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Deconstructing Mamas podcast. Today we're talking with Matt Shantz. He's a hospital social worker in child and adolescent mental health. He's also a spiritual mentor and weaves both of his professions into his work to help individuals heal. And just as a warning, guys, we are talking about spanking today, and that can be incredibly triggering to some people. So we just wanted to make that very, very clear. We're going to deep dive into this topic and do so without shame, but we want to know better so that we can do better. And so that's our goal today. So Matt, we're really excited to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
We're really excited. Before we dive into our topic for today, can you tell us what your day looks like, what your family looks like, and then maybe outside of some of the things that you do kind of in your day-to-day roles, what makes your heart come alive?
Yes. Well, thank you. I am a child and youth worker and slash social worker in a hospital. So in child and adolescent mental health, as you guys just kind of talked about. And so my day to day looks like therapy, one-on-one with clients, with young people. Our age range is 6 to 18. So, I mean, that covers kind of a lot of developmental stages, which I absolutely love because I get to do different things with different kiddos in different walks of their life, right? In different parts of their life. I get to work with their parents too and families. And so it's just so many really great experiences that I get with families and in my community, right? And getting to be in this community and be a part of what's going on in the schools and different community aspects here. So I love that part. And then kind of part two, I'm a spiritual mentor. So it's something I just decided, you know what, I'm going to try this. I graduated from seminary a couple months ago. I'm doing this on the side where I'm walking with people, particularly out of more adverse experiences slash traumatic experiences in religious spaces through kind of word of mouth, networking, have been walking with people through that. And I really love that as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I got my wife, Kendra, who's American. So that's my connection to the USA. And so my two boys are also American and Canadian. So they get both those passports. And gosh, I feel like when you're a dad and a husband, that like, that's your world. And then the things that I just described are like kind of on the side, right? So I've got like child and youth work. I've got social work. I've got some mentoring stuff. But most of the time I'm like making sure that the little guy's like not running out to the road or, you know, getting the sleds hooked up because we got so much snow right now. Just go for like one more sled ride. And that's life. Like it's so chaotic. And it's so fun and it's so exhausting. Like I'm just tired most of the time, but like something quirky about me, I absolutely love history. I will kind of find very obscure historical things and just get kind of almost like obsessive about it. So maybe it's like a particular way in which the English did something in the, you know, the 1300s and start reading about stuff like that. And my little guy, my six-year-old, has, I think, picked up a bit of that. So we'll start reading books about knights together and stuff like that. So yeah, that's me.
What's the quirkiest or most interesting thing you have found in your delve into history spaces? Like, do you have one thing that you kind of obsessed over?
Such a great question.
Like, what are you doing with your little guy right now?
So my little guy's obsessed with knights, right? So we're in medieval times, which are both like wonderful and horrific. He's like overwhelmed with kind of the fanfare and like what it looked like and the way they dressed. And And so, for a 6-year-old, I'm staying there, and then, but then I'm reading like the subscript of what's happening. I'm like, this is, I mean, speaking of kind of our topic a little bit, some of the kind of the trauma, the religious oppression that's going on in that period of time is just kind of, so much barbarity, honestly. That's not really an answer to your question,
Oh,
but
no,
I
that's
think
good.
that's where we are right now. We're sitting with the knights. You got a bunch of little knights for Christmas that we play with all the time, and that's the world we're in.
So, Matt, what word would you use now to describe where you came from, what your faith journey, your back faith background is?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to think about it is kind of fundamentalism, but more specifically, it was a form of Mennonite fundamentalism. And so it had all the markings that kind of evangelical fundamentalism has and had in terms of, rigidity, rules, a lot of legalism, high control religion, essentially. But it had this kind of Anabaptist flavor to it where we were very kind of set apart. So a lot of no TV, a lot of rules that were kind of above and beyond what you would see kind of in mainstream evangelicalism at the time, growing up in the 90s. So I felt very different than everyone else around me. We dressed differently. We did everything different. We went to a different school. We were pretty isolated. We took that whole be set apart pretty seriously. So I grew up in a world that, though it was the 90s, I often say it felt more like the 50s for me, just because of the ways in which I was experiencing the world. I wasn't watching Lion King. I wasn't doing the things that other 90s kids were doing. I was milking cows and going to my little Mennonite school and going to a lot of revival meetings.
That's so interesting. And what about now? What word or phrase would you describe where you are currently?
Yeah, I love that question, and I was thinking about it, and I feel like it changes every day. One of the words, I mean, that came to my mind was just kind of contemplative. But when I looked at that word, I was like, it means, to pray or pray a lot. And I'm like, I'm not very good at praying, at least not in the traditional sense that I kind of was raised with. So maybe more like a wandering contemplative, who finds solace in kind of the gray spaces walking through. Visually, I'm just thinking of, standing in the woods and finding ways to communicate with God in ways that weren't kind of traditional to me growing up.
Yeah, I was thinking about the word contemplative as you were talking there, because I would view myself more as a contemplative too. But I just take the word contemplate. I think that's where it lands for me. I'm not just rush, 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 rush all through life and not thinking about it and not processing through it and spending time with what's happening to my soul, I think is more what that word means to me. Does that describe it a little bit for you, or no, or is it something different?
I love that. Yeah, I love that. I think you put some words to thoughts I'm having. Yeah, what's happening to my soul? I'm gonna write that down somewhere.
That's
Yeah,
good.
I think so. Like, it's so much of my faith experience up until a few years ago was disconnected from my body, right? Was disconnected from even from my soul, right? I thought I was thinking about my soul, but it was kind of an intellectual exercise in what's right and what's wrong. And so to pay attention to my soul or to my body or to how I'm experiencing the world, how my family's experiencing the world. Yeah, that's good.
That's good.
Has that been at all triggering for you to come back into your body and to start living like that? Like, I feel like that's something that I've experienced, and I hear a lot of people talking about this idea of like coming back into their body, like, doesn't feel safe or it doesn't feel welcome or they feel like they're doing it wrong because they should be more intellectual. Have you experienced that?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it's still really hard for me to do. I have these moments where it feels as though I feel embodied, or where I'm, truly kind of experiencing the connection between my heart and my mind. But often in times of stress and in, difficult times, I find myself very disconnected and will kind of rationalize and do the intellectual thing that my brain's kind of wired to do. So yeah, the finding safety in my body has been 3 years now of really just like working at that. But yeah, great question.
I think you hit on the nail on the head was It's not that we would be embodied. So many of us are quote unquote embodied, but our bodies feel anxious and out of, crazy and tingly all over. And it's trying to speak to us. But the practice of being in our bodies and feeling safe is like different than being in our bodies and we're out of our minds, like not, I mean, out of our minds in that we can't even process what's happening. And that's what I mean about out of our minds. We cannot mentally process or soulfully process what's happening in our bodies. Oh, listen, I know that journey all too well.
Man.
So good.
Yeah, when you reached out to us initially some months ago, you told us, it was so cute, you're DMing us on Instagram. Hey, I'm really passionate about ending the spanking practice. And I think it was because you had listened to our episode with Dr. Eric Sievert called Is God Violent? So if people want to go back and listen to that, this is where this podcast, I think, has been born from. So I know I'm grateful to be diving into this topic. I know, Liz, do you want to speak to your passion about it first before I ask the question?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really passionate about this topic in particular because spanking has was something that was very harmful to me as a child, and I have sort of watched that go back like generations before me, right? Like I've seen that done, that being done to my parents has affected them and on and on, and I decided to end the cycle with my kids as a parent. But I think there's a lot of lack of information, and I think people still wonder if this is truly like the only way to get their kids to listen. And so I just think it's important. But I am very passionate about it because I think it can be incredibly harmful. Not that we can't heal from it, but I do think that it can be harmful. So yeah.
So, can you share with us, Matt, then some insight into why you have so much passion surrounding the subject?
Yeah. I think like most people who get passionate about something, it's birthed out of our stories about our experiences, right? And that's the case for me. Like I said earlier, I grew up in kind of a fundamentalist, high control religion where, I mean, spanking was just the way you raise kids. And weirdly enough, like we were Anabaptist, and so we were pacifist. In fact, we were beyond pacifist. We were non-resistant, which meant that zero, we didn't even vote. We were so kind of disconnected from anything that we considered force, except for how we raised kids. There, we had kind of bought into the whole fundamentalist, Dobson world that was swirling around outside of us, even though we weren't very connected to those spaces. It was truly how kids were raised. And so I grew up like that. Me and my siblings, all the my cousins, everybody I knew, that was how you were disciplined, was with spanking. And I think it's kind of important to identify, define spanking, particularly as I'm thinking about it. There's, people mean different things when they say the word spanking, but often what I've seen in my kind of personal experience and in kind of corners of Christianity, including evangelicalism and other forms of Christian expression, it's often something that's done in a quote, controlled, loving manner. So it's not of an out of control, flailing, kind of like hitting in the face kind of thing, but it's done generally on the butt, sometimes with a paddle, sometimes with a hand, a belt, some sort of instrument. And it's only supposed to last for, the duration of time until, quote, the child's will is broken, which we can talk more about. But that's where, so I grew up in that, right? So I'm surrounded by it. We're raised like that. I'm hearing it at church when kids aren't sitting still. Like it's intense. So when I'm in my teen years, no longer obviously being spanked, but I know that it's deeply impacted me already then. I don't cry. So unless, I'm physically hurt, there's really nothing that makes me cry. And I'll, come back to that later in therapy. So I'm seeing ways in which it's impacted me already. I go off to college and I'm studying psychology, and I start seeing all these studies and this research that's been around forever, but that we had always been told was the experts or the secular kind of society's viewpoint of this particular topic. And I start thinking, wait a minute, there is all kinds of stuff here that I feel deeply because it connects with my experience and the ways in which I experienced being spanked as a kid. So that's what got me passionate about it. I started talking to other people who had experienced spanking in similar ways like I had. They started telling me stories that sounded a lot like mine, emotional repression, the ways in which their body responded. And I started thinking, gosh, like this is happening on a kind of a wide scale within Christianity, within many subsets of Christianity. And there's a lot of people that I think are silently suffering. So I slowly started wading through the research, started getting a little braver to talk about it in certain spaces. And yeah, I'm here today trying this.
I'm already like sweating a little bit. I feel like hearing you talk about that and just the idea of, breaking a child's will. And for those of us who were stronger willed, for myself, and I don't know, Matt, about your experience with that, but I was a strong-willed child. And so, like, I needed that extra love, right? Like, that extra, yes, I'm sweating. This is, wow, this is going to be intense.
Yeah, this is real stuff we're doing here. I mean, this is
Mm-hmm.
quote unquote a podcast and we're out there, but we're talking about stuff that we're all personally, in many ways, can relate to. And it's going to affect our bodies if we're embodied.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just true. Can you just tell us what you've learned in your research surrounding spanking as a means of discipline and punishment?
Yeah. So what's interesting, like I said, because of the way that I grew up, we were kind of told the experts, they're wrong because they're secular. This is the only way to raise kids. There's a couple verses in Proverbs. There might be one in Hebrews that we can kind of tie to Proverbs in some way, but this is how you do it. So I start reading the research and I see that this research isn't, quote, new research. We have research from as early as the, 1920s and even before that, where experts are saying, look, we really should not be spanking kids. But what you see is kind of this. It's as though there's the research, there's the experts, there's the people writing about parenting, and then there's Christianity's influence on culture, particularly in the West. And it's just kind of like this bulwark, really, that stands against this research. And really, until I think really recently, Christendom, if I'm going to use that word, overpowered the research. And a lot of stuff got buried in archives and in libraries and in places where it's like, yeah, well, I turned out fine. So this just must be a one-off study. They're wrong, et cetera. And so, but when you look at the research, there's really no study that's been done. There might be an outlier here or there that says that it's, quote, a positive thing in any way. All of it kind of speaks to the negative impacts on brain development, reduction of gray matter in the brain. I think the study that's been most, not helpful is the word, but eye-opening to me and for others that I've talked to is one that's very recent from 2021. I first came across it when I was reading Gabor Mate's book, The Myth of Normal. And in that book, he references this. He's just got a couple pages in there on spanking kiddos. And it's from Harvard, 2021, and it's titled Corporal Punishment, an Elevated Neural Response to Threat in Children. The key finding of this study is that spanking in the kind of traditional sense, so non-abusive as it would be called in many places, has the same impact on brain development that more severe forms of maltreatment, such as sexual abuse and violent physical abuse, have on the developing brain. And I think that's pretty powerful. And I think it speaks to anecdotally some of the things that I've seen with people I've talked to in my own experience. That it was kind of, quote, loving, controlled spanking.
What sticks out to me the most is intention isn't really always the thing that we need to be focused on, right? Like, it's how it's internalized by the person who receives it. And that's always been really baffling to me. Now people are talking about this, and individuals who have experienced this are saying that they've internalized this as, for some of us, have internalized it as abuse, right? Or if not logically, our bodies, our minds have internalized this as some form of abuse. That should trump all intention, right? Is that people have been harmed by this. We thought we were doing the right thing for so many years. We thought this was how we did it. Now we know it's not. So now we need to like humble ourselves and say, whoops, yikes, how do we fix this? And how do we change this? And that's where I start to get really passionate is when, like you're saying, like people are still digging in their heels. And I'm just like, listen, like now we know better. So we need
Absolutely.
to do better and stop trying to defend a former version of yourself, right? That thought this was an okay thing because you were told it was like when people are hurt, we have to look at that. Period. End of story. And people are very hurt. And I feel like I need to look into some of these studies now.
When you and I were talking too, prior to recording, I was really surprised at something that you told me when I heard it. And I think it's research-based and experience-based, as Liz was saying, like more and more people are coming and telling their stories about it. And this is another trigger warning for people. I'm just going to say that right now, too. Can you share that with our audience and what you've learned about it?
This is the one that you find buried deep in the archives of research. And I think because of how uncomfortable it is. But that's the kind of sexual connection between spanking and kids. And so this is in the research. It's there, but it's deep. In fact, it's as far back as we have conversations about this in medieval times, where people would talk about the ways in which corporal punishment was done in a sexual way, whether it was by priests or nuns or in particular spaces where, people were brought out in public and made to go completely naked for the ways in which they were punished. So there's sexual tones to violence throughout all of human history. But in particular, when it comes to spanking, there is certain people whose nervous systems respond to spanking in a sexual way. And so there's biological reasons for that. There's psychological reasons for that. There might even be sociological reasons for that. I think we're still trying to understand this. It's super uncomfortable. No parent wants to ever imagine that they unintentionally sexually assaulted their kid. But unfortunately, the research is here and the stories are here. And I've talked to people face to face about this.
One of the things I think you brought up, and I'm just going to be very blunt, is that sometimes children's bodies become sexually aroused during the spanking process. So a boy may have an erection, or a girl may have lubrication that, comes to that the area of her body. And I just wonder if is that kind of where we're going with this? Is that what we're talking about? And that's like a physical response, correct?
Correct.
And then you said there's other responses, social or so psychological, or and then I guess the other component I want to talk about is God being in the middle of all of that.
Thanks for kind of pulling those apart there. That's absolutely, yeah. So first, physically, what we've seen is that when they're spanking on the buttocks, the biological reason that some people get aroused is that when you're hitting there, blood flows to the buttocks, and sometimes when a child's hit repeatedly there, the blood rushes to an area through an artery, and that artery also branches off to the genital area. And so it can cause erection and can cause arousal in kiddos.
I think, Matt, when you first brought it up for me, I was not surprised in many ways. That is not particularly what happened to me, but I am not surprised at all about the normal physiological response. Our bodies are responding the way that they should and are designed to. I just wonder, too, if we can just put the God piece in there a little bit of. It seems to me like this weird, perfect storm of trauma that's God, love, physical violence, and sexual arousal. And that just feels awful to me, like absolutely awful. And I just want to acknowledge that, I guess, is what I'm saying. Like maybe you're sitting there going, no wonder I'm so effed up. And I guess I just want to put it there that this is all the stuff that's been stirring in me since you and I spoke originally. And I just wanted you to have, I don't know if you need more words or want more words around that little piece.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no wonder I'm so effed up, I think, is such a thesis statement for this. There is so much to unravel if we're talking about sexual, spiritual, physical, emotional. It's complex, right? I'm not diagnosing it as this, it's different for each person, but it has the flavor of complex PTSD, right? Because it's complex and it's trauma. And it's repeated throughout childhood for a lot of kids. This isn't a one-time thing like a car accident per se, not comparing, just giving an example. But it's a repeated thing that happens. And the other word in there that we're not talking about is developmental. And so it's something that's happening sometimes even before a kid has language to know what the hell is going on. And so you've got stuff happening when kids are 2, 3, 4, while the brain's developing, and all those kinds of domains that we just talked about are being touched on and impacted in some pretty terrible ways. And so I'm doing this because I love you. I'm doing this because God tells me to. And you're going, and my body's responding like this. What kind of God would prescribe this kind of terror to happen to me? What kind of God would prescribe this kind of result from something that's supposed to produce character or produce obedience?
Thank you, Matt.
I don't know enough about child development, but I can't imagine that as a young child, your little teeny intuition, right, would actually believe that being hit. Like neurologically, I know there are shifts that happen where you start to believe that being hit is love. But like initially, we must know, wait a second, this isn't okay. This doesn't feel okay. This is scary. This is all these things before that shift happens. The other thing that I sort of wanted to talk about briefly is there's the actual act of spanking, right? But then there's like things that often happen beforehand that are also confusing. And you talked a little bit about, you know, where you're told, like, I'm doing this because I love you, whack, you know. But there's also like, for some people, it's like you're taken away from the public, right? You're taken into a room alone with this person, right? Your pants are ripped off of you for some people, right? There's like a lack of control, there's fear, there's all of these things that are happening. You might be like trying to get away. There's a lot of like trauma sort of surrounding like the actual like main event, if you will. And as you were talking about this, you know, this idea of sexual assault or abuse and how we internalize spanking, it really makes a lot of sense to me because the entire event is traumatic. There's a lack of control, and I think oftentimes a lot of fear.
Yeah.
I shared your research about this with somebody this past weekend, and they also brought up wait till your father gets home
Yeah.
or wait till later. And then there's this long period of time of fear. It's the event, but it's all that's leading into it. It's the time that you're just like petrified of what's going to happen. So I don't know.
So I'm thinking about Ted Tripp because he's so popular and in Christian circles still today. And he has a whole chapter in his book, Shepherding a Child's Heart, where he prescribes like a step-by-step way to spank a kid. It's exactly what you just described, Liz and Esther, of this kind of like, you calm down, you get him into a different room. And then in his, at least in the first version, you're supposed to take the kid's pants off, which I just, is such a violation of their privacy, bodily autonomy, et cetera. And yes, that all is an incredibly traumatic event, even before you're getting hit. So I have a friend who was both raped as a child and also spanked kind of biblically. And she defines that many years later, working through it in EMDR and stuff like that, that the way her body responded in both cases, she has the exact same kind of physiological response, and that the process leading up to the spanking for her, as we just kind of laid out, was exactly her body responded in the exact same way as she did when she was raped. And so, again, and these are parents following biblical methods who didn't abuse her in any other way, who were just trying to kind of follow the biblical standard that had been set out for them.
Air quotes biblical, right?
Air quotes,
Right,
biblical.
air quotes.
Yeah.
The way someone has interpreted the Bible.
Absolutely.
Well, why? This is so, it's really sad. Whew. So, how and why do you believe that many high control religions deem spanking as necessary discipline? And as we've already talked about, even going so far to call it loving and godly.
Yeah, it comes down to a couple things for me. One is just the way that high control religions think about love and what love is. Love and control are often synonymous, right? And so, in a religion that tells you that God is love, but that means that God is particularly dangerous and his love is contingent on a particular set of rules. And if you transgress those rules, you could burn forever. Spanking doesn't seem that bad. And Ted Tripp uses this language, sorry to harp on him, but he uses the language of you're essentially saving that child's soul from hell. And so is a ton of fear, right? So parents are, they see themselves often as agents of God, as someone is like, gosh, this is how I keep my kiddo from, being separated from me forever. What a terrifying thought. And so if I've got to cause them pain now, at least God's not gonna cause them pain forever. And so I think that's one reason.
A little bit of pain now will prevent them from a lot of pain later. Yeah, I hear you.
And yet we're all living in hell on earth now because, yes. Right, like there's that piece where it's like, okay, well, now life is really hard and we're paying thousands of dollars for therapy and we can't connect to our bodies. And
yeah.
I'm sorry. What was your second point? Liz and I are we're getting very worked up. But
yeah, sorry. It's an intense.
It's okay. It's good. It's good to be worked up about this. It's good to be worked up.
Yeah. I think the second one is tied in. It's just the idea of bodily autonomy is just not a thing in high control religion, because you're not your own. You're your parents. You are gods, but you're not you, right? You're not in your body. You are somebody else's. And so you see that language in a lot of Christian parenting literature of, you know, again, like I said, the parent's the agent of God. And so they have kind of complete control and domination over the kid. And so spanking is the kind of fruit of that, right? And so we are going to use violent means to make sure that we keep our control. Kind of on a personal story, I experienced some religious trauma in an internship where I was under a pastor who was, it's hard for kind of me to define, but I think had some narcissistic traits. And I just kind of dutifully followed along behind him, and in the process got myself very hurt, and my family as well. And I think back to that experience, and I think about the way I was trained to think about authority, and the way that I think subconsciously and consciously, violence in my childhood gave me a kind of subconscious response to authority, where I would just kind of assume that I've got to follow authority or I'm going to get hurt in some way. And I saw that play out in a number of different capacities in my adulthood life, where because I never really had bodily autonomy as a kid, my ability to kind of self-actualize is still something that I'm really working on now, much later in my adulthood. And I think a lot of that happens in high control spaces where there's no autonomy. And so you're set up for all kinds of abuse.
Right. The setup for future abuse, I think, is a very powerful key there. Like, and not even just physical violence, emotional violence, right? Anybody's allowed to be, if they're an authority, they're allowed to use whatever means necessary to keep me in control.
Yeah.
And that you are not your own. And I almost was mouthing that as along with you as you were saying it. And I think you've been bought with a price. All that stuff is so toxic and harmful.
We'll be right back to the rest of today's podcast episode. But first, we want to give a shout out to some of our amazing Patreon supporters, Jessica Anderson, Rachel Laws, and Joan Crawford. For just $3 a month, you can help us keep the lights on and at the same time be part of our safe and private Patreon community, where you won't feel so alone in this changing faith and parenting journey. Plus, there's lots of extras there. We hope to see you. Now, back to the episode.
So how do you personally view spanking or any kind of hitting of a child violence antithetical to love? You said you thought that we grew up thinking love and control were the same things.
Yeah.
How would you say they're antithetical to each other?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I was thinking about the Passion of Christ, if you're thinking from kind of that perspective for people who have a particular faith worldview. There's no control in that narrative at all. In fact, it's a love over power. You know, Christ's entire experiences here on earth were one of choosing love over power. And so I think they are antithetical, you know, to each other. They are not the same. We're in an environment in the West in particular with colonialism and all the kinds of things that we swim in that water. And so sometimes we don't even see the ways in which we think about what it means to control people. Mm-hmm. But I think the original message of Christ was one of love over power, one of choosing weakness over strength, a weakness that prefers other and takes care of self, you know?
Ooh, I like that. Prefers other and takes care of self.
Mm-hmm.
Not prefers others and diminishes self.
Diminishes self, yeah.
That's really good. Well, I have three questions that I'm going to ask you next. And I can hear like our audience already asking them. So I would like to just throw them out there and see what your response is to those as having done your research. The first one is, I was spanked and I grew up fine. I'm fine. I hear that so often. I said it to myself for a very long time. I grew up spanked and I'm fine. What would be a good response for me to say to my former self?
Yeah, I said the same thing, right? When I was a 18, 19-year-old teenager, I remember feeling the same thing, even having conversations with people, that I'm fine. I think we have to ask, like, what does fine mean? I mean, that's one question. Fine in terms of you can function in the world. Okay. You can hold down a job. Okay. But fine in terms of, are you connected to your body? What does it feel like when someone uses harsh language with you? Can you notice the ways you feel when you think back to a particular spanking experience? It was interesting with so many people I talk to, they'll joke about their kind of childhood spanking and stuff like that. But when I ask them, can you walk me through one? Suddenly you see the shift, right? You see the shift in the body. You see the shift in the way that they're processing it, because suddenly they're going back to it and they're back. Oh yeah, I'm a 5-year-old getting spanked because I couldn't sit still in church. Wait a minute. What the heck is that about? That would be my first question to someone who says that is, let's explore that a little bit.
I hear a lot too, like on the backs of that question, Esther, I hear a lot of, you know, kids these days, like they're brats, like they're not disciplined and they just do whatever. And, you know, all these kids screaming at their moms in the grocery store or like whatever. I feel like I just see that on the internet all of the time. And like, how do we need to shift how we view children developmentally, right? So that we're no longer looking at, you know, being seen and not being heard as like the epitome of child discipline or whatever, right? Like, how do we need to shift the ways that we're looking at child development? What's actually appropriate that we were deeming in need of discipline? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's such an interesting one, right? Because you see those comments all the time. It's like, you know, we need to bring back the paddle or like back corporal punishment back to schools because, you know, kids are out of control. And it's such, in my opinion, it's such a kind of short-sighted view of kind of historical framework. I think it's Gabor Mate who talks about how indigenous cultures here in North America didn't hit their kids, but were introduced to corporal punishment by Europeans who got here and were like, here's how you raise kids. And so for thousands of years in many cultures across the world, there were indigenous peoples who did not hit their kids. And so that kind of framework of almost like we got to return to the 1950s to keep our kids in control is odd. And it's also, there's a writer by the name of Alice Miller who talks specifically about corporal punishment and just uses the example of Nazi Germany and how across the board in Germany, corporal punishment was significant and huge and used in homes, and how that didn't in any way keep an entire civilization from moving towards some pretty horrible outcomes. And that's kind of on a broad level to answer the question. But also I just think about it in terms of, like you said, reimagining what it means to be a little person and being allowed to have feelings and being allowed to develop without it being stunted, without it being shoved down, without being seen and not heard, you know? Mm.
I feel like I've heard from a few people who have sort of come out of the woodwork and they've been doing this with their kids. They've been doing this sort of like gentle parenting that gets scoffed at. And they've been doing this sort of like making space for feelings. And their kids are now like in their teen years and who are saying like, guys, like this, it's worth it. Like you don't have perfect kids, but they're able to connect with you, connect with themselves, connect with their peers. And so like someone might come into my home and say, gosh, your 4-year-old and 6-year-old, they are like off the wall. My kids have a lot of big feelings. Mm. But guess what? I had a lot of big feelings too.
Yeah.
And I wasn't allowed to have them. And that's been detrimental to me. And so it does feel sometimes like maybe we're missing the mark as parents because we're like, gosh, these kids are just like, they're always crying and they're this and they're that. But then you hear from people who are a little bit ahead of us who've been doing it for a while and are saying, no, that's exactly what they need. And it's okay that they melt down in Walmart and some 70-year-old dude comes up to you and says, you got to get a hold of that kid. Like, it's okay. get down on the floor with them, create space with them. Like, those things are all important. And I think if we can kind of hold on to that little bit of hope and just keep on going and move toward the next generation instead of backsliding to the generations before us, we're going to get somewhere really great.
Yeah.
But it's hard.
That's good.
Going back to the podcast that birthed this episode with Dr. Eric Siebert, who grew up in a Mennonite tradition that is not violent at all and did not spank their children, which is so interesting, right? We can just hold both of those spaces, an Anabaptist tradition. And he was never spanked. And he's my age, 50s, somewhere in the 50s. And he's the gentlest, kindest, most loving person. And I thought, oh my gosh, what do I want my children or my grandson is 58. I want them to be like Dr. Eric Siebert. I mean, I was like, I want them to be you. And just to know that you don't have to do this. I mean, this is not like, I just guess permission to think like he was not spanked and he's actually fine.
Yeah.
Maybe all the way down deep inside.
I mean, Matt had said this before. It's like so fear-driven, right? We're like afraid. I mean, even if you're not doing this from a biblical standpoint, you're afraid that your kids are going to be out of control. You're afraid they're going to end up whatever, right? And so we do these things because we're afraid.
Right.
Yeah, it's so good too. I'm tracking with you completely, Liz, because my wife and I have to look each other in the eye sometime and just be like, what you said, it's going to be okay. You know, like those kinds of emotions weren't okay for us, but it's okay for our little guys. And we're going to get through this together. So I love what you're saying just about that hope that we're carrying into the future together as we do this thing, because it does mean, yeah, you're going to have these moments where it takes a heck of a lot longer to go somewhere than it would have when I was a kid, because I would have gone or I would have been hit for that.
Yeah.
So it's hard. And I joke sometimes, I'm like, gosh, I wish I was a boomer parent, you know, but I'm kidding. It's like, there's a way to do this different. And I say that with respect to the things that older generations did well, right? I don't say that to say that everything I do now is perfect and amazing. I really don't. I know that but I hold that tension at the same time thinking we can do better for our littles.
Yeah. As a grandmother, it's so funny to watch my daughter who does not use any spanking at all, which I'm so happy for. And my husband and I would look at each other when her son, who's very full of emotions and very passionate, and we would look at each other and be like, let's see how this plays out. How is this going to work? And yet I know and am so confident that she's making such good, healthy decisions. But the meltdowns and the stuff, it seems very extreme to me compared to the way I was raised or even the way I handled things when my kids were little, regretfully. And I'll tell you, just watching the developmental stages play out, and now he's 6 and a half and in kindergarten, and his body is able to regulate itself more. I mean, we've done things now that there's no way we could even do a year ago or 2 years ago, because that's just developmentally appropriate.
Yes.
And I am like beaming with delight to say, there's a better way, hold out hope. So even watching 0 to 6, and then I get so excited to watch him be like 12 or 13 when those other stages come into play. So if you're out there,
right,
hear from an older mom, and it might not be able to be your own parents right now, but I'm saying to you, go for it. Because I know for sure that what I was doing did not overly work at all, and it caused harm, and I regret it.
It's so true what you were saying, Esther. It's like allowing the developmental stages to just happen instead of stopping them and shutting them down. And I think that that's really true. Like, they do kind of get there.
They get there.
And every kid is different, right? So some kids, it's like they're slower to get there, or they sort of get there. But you do see them kind of get there on their own in a way that many of us weren't allowed to. And you gotta hang in there, and there's gonna be some meltdowns and there's gonna be some stuff. Like, it's not easy.
Yeah.
But can we trust that our kids' internal self, like, knows more about themselves than we do, right? In some ways, right? Like, it doesn't mean we just let them do whatever they want, but like, we allow them to kind of guide themselves, and they do get there.
Well, that's the second question I have for you. What do we do instead? and maybe littles, middles, bigs. I mean, I can maybe speak to the bigs thing if we have time, but you're a dad and you have two like boys, and they're, did you tell us how old they were?
They're 1 and 6.
1 and 6. So you have a little. Okay.
I've got a 6-year-old. Solidarity.
Solidarity. Yeah.
Yes.
Four and six over here. So we're just.
I have 6-year-old, one step removed. All right. You're the dad to these boys. And I love what you write on your website. You said you're humbled and grateful for the honor to walk alongside of them as a guide and friend. Can you share with us maybe a few other options that we have that are not spanking? And here's the caveat. That provide good boundaries with your kids and then also loving connection. So not just free for all, but also not controlling.
Yeah.
Have at it.
Yeah. That's a good question. And it's funny. I was talking to my wife about it. I'm like, oh, now I got to go on here and talk about what we're doing well and what we're not doing well. Because I mean, I'm right in the thick of it all.
Yes.
You know, one of the things we talk a lot about, Kendra and I, my wife, is just our family values, and not in the kind of James Dobson family values way, but what is it that we expect of each other? What we expect, you know, my wife and I expect of each other in terms of the way we talk to each other, the ways in which we interact with each other in the home, and then what we expect of the kiddos based on their developmental stages, just like we talked about. And so it's a family culture, I guess, or a team. So instead of this authoritarian top down, I'm the boss, I told you to put your shoes on, so put your shoes on. Instead of this kind of, you hit your brother, so I'm going to hit you. There's a ton of getting down on my knees, looking my 6-year-old in the eye and talking about, hey, in this home, we do our best to be kind to each other. We do our best to use kind words with each other. And then that means a lot of repair too. So it means a lot of repair for my wife and I in the times when I didn't have my coffee yet and I'm not feeling it and I raise my voice with my kiddos. It means getting down at eye level and saying, hey, you know how we talked about that in this house, we try to use kind words with each other? Well, the words daddy used weren't super kind, were they? And then can he acknowledge that, you know? And yeah, no, they weren't. And repair. So just coming back to that again and again. So, I mean, for me, practically speaking, that just means we spend a lot of time talking to each other. I spend a lot of time kind of on my knees trying to get eye level with both the boys in ways that hopefully they're seeing the way in which my wife and I are working at our own ways in which our relationship is working and in the ways that that then impacts them. So, yeah.
The thing that you said earlier about power and control and love and control. And I think this can play out all the way through in my quote unquote day job. I spend a lot of time with parents of teens and young adults, and switching my entire way of thinking that love and control do not go hand in hand. And there is never an appropriate time for me to try to control my kids,
so good.
Whether they're 3 or 7 or 13 or 25. And even just switching that mindset of like, you know, you get to the middle school years or, and they're rolling their eyes at you and you know, you're going to get them under control or they're, and it just switched to me that my personal goal has become with anybody in my life is that they become completely themselves and not who I deem them to be or what I make them to be. And so any kind of provision along that way where, like you said, you're getting down on the floor, listening to their heart, their struggles, their pain, their joys, listening to your own in the process and coming alongside and saying, like, who do you want to be? Like, is this a value of yours? I just think about Jesus coming alongside instead of having power over. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's like, why do you still love Jesus? I'm like, because he just freaking came alongside of people. Mm-hmm. He never wielded power over, ever,
yeah.
ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, if that's the way that he is treating people and treating children, the only example we ever have of him with children is him coming alongside and inviting them into the midst and saying, listen to them. I mean, it's just like, what are we doing? So I'm getting very emotional here, but like that removing yourself from the position of power and coming alongside, as you said, like the gentle, kind, and friend. I'm journeying with you. I feel that way all the way up now until my kids are in their 20s and even a couple of them in their 30s. I'm journeying with. I never want to wield power over, ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think those two things, Matt, are so important, the repair piece and then the getting down on their level thing. And I think there's a lot of different avenues you can take in between, right? We can say all sorts of things in between, right? And we all will take different paths with that because there's so much information and it's so damn confusing and no one knows what they're doing. But if we can repair with our kids, like I notice that. If I do nothing else, if I repair with my kid, something changes in the way that their face looks and the way that they respond to me, and same with when I get down to their level. Like those two things are complete game changers. And so maybe we need to say, okay, if you do nothing else, like just do these two things, right? And it's okay if the in-between feels a little rough, right? Like it's okay if you're not really sure how to handle, you know, all of these very specific instances, right? We come from a place of, like Esther said, like not trying to control, just coming alongside, just trying to understand, and then like owning our own stuff because we're the adults. And even though some of us might be working through stuff and we might not feel very adult, right? That's not an excuse. We're still the adults.
Yeah.
And it's our job to create a safe space.
Yes.
So yeah, it's tricky. It's really hard.
Well, that brings me to like question number three that we're starting to go into, which is, what would you say to somebody who maybe has older kids or maybe even now who has spanked their kids is listening to this podcast and being like, maybe a little shame is rising up inside of them, or maybe they lose it on occasions and they just go back to default the way they grew up, right? We're in the messy middle. We're deconstructing all the ways of thinking and trying to find new ways of doing it that are healthy, right? So for the mom or the dad that's out there that spanked their kid this morning, or maybe spanked their kid a long time ago and there's been kind of a rift, what is a healthy way to take responsibility? And then what's our message here, Liz? Grace, give ourselves grace and then have space to move. And my voice is still shaking a little, space to move forward. Do you have any thoughts on that? What have you done maybe for your parents, or I don't know, even a mom out there, a dad out there that might want to be changing, but isn't quite there yet?
Yeah. I hold that question with a lot of, I mean, you just used the word grace, but just the weight of that question, because I know like just hearing some of the things that we talked about today can be extremely unnerving. And, you know, there's things that I think for a lot of parents, they were just doing their best. They were just doing what they could with the materials they were given, with the things they were hearing in church, the thing the pastor was telling them. I'm just trying to honor God. And so I hold so much grace for that. I really do. And I think the only way that we can truly move forward is like through repair, right? So for that parent, I mean, gosh, repair. Like if you have adult kids out there that are, you know, you spanked and you go, oh my goodness, you're hearing this and you're going, I wonder how it impacted them. Reach out, phone them up, take them out for coffee, look them in the eyes and ask them that question. You know, how did you experience it? What was it like for you? And do it now on your knees, looking them in the eyes. And know that so many times, I'm speaking from experience, it turns into a beautiful moment of repair. If you can't do that, then know that like we've all made mistakes and that there's so much grace, I think. Yeah. And for the parent that, you know, still gets in their triggers, gosh, I get in my triggers. Like I was just talking earlier in this podcast, right, about how I get out of my body so much. Like when my son disrespects me, sometimes I just feel it, right? I just feel it, or it feels like disrespect to me, I should say, in my body. I'm like, you can't act like that. That's wrong. That's not allowed to be in a house. I'm your authority. These things rise up in me that were just kind of drilled into me for years and years and years. And so triggers are a real thing. Be gentle with yourself. Be gentle.
Yeah. Love that.
I think as parents too, like we need to do our own work, right? Like it's really hard to repair with our kids when we're not doing our own work.
Good.
And so if there's some sort of a block in terms of repairing with your older kids, or you feel like you can't do that, or then I encourage you to look inward a little bit and maybe do some of that inner work. You know, I mean, maybe there is a lot of shame there, right? Or maybe there is your own pain from your own upbringing or whatever that looks like. And so sometimes that's like the first step for us, right? Before we're able to go to that next step of approaching, you know, someone else and asking for forgiveness and asking to hear their story and then being able to sit and hear their story.
Yeah. I was wondering too, in the moment when you're losing it with your little guys, because I mean, gosh, yes. And that doesn't change as they're teens, you know, and young adults, just you're going to be triggered. What you said, Liz, is so powerful about doing your own work. There's also a big difference I found with me when there was like a one-off that was out of character for me and I could repair immediately. And then I noticed a pattern in myself. I'm always screaming, which is violent as well. Maybe not physical, but emotional violence. And I remember my youngest, so I just used yelling as a form or whatever, coming to me at 6, 7 and saying, when you yell, I feel so upset inside. And of course I was changing as a parent, so she was allowed to say that. And it was a line in the sand and I had to really unpack, why is that a consistent model of behavior for me? Mm-hmm. And get some real inner work done. So there's like those one-offs where you're like, oh my gosh, she doesn't usually yell. But here my mom was just especially, my dad was especially losing it. And you can repair those so quickly. But then like you said earlier, Matt, the things that come over and over and over and over again are the things that cause long-term damage with our kids, right? The spanking every week or every day or every whatever, the yelling, the whatever violent tendencies we have, verbal, physical. I mean, I have to do that in my marriage. I have to do that in my friendships. I do that everywhere, right? Oh, wow, I'm noticing a pattern. So those are really where I kind of hone in and say, I better unpack this with somebody else, you know? So, yeah. You guys are so great. It's so good. Can you tell us just the most challenging part of parenting without violence and spanking? And then also the most healing maybe for you on your own personal journey of parenting without violence?
Yeah. I think we touched on it a little bit. I mean, it's the letting go of like, I'm not in control of these little humans. Right? They're going to do things that I'm just going to have to stand there and be like, okay,
all right.
You know, everyone watch, you know? And it's because, like I said, there's my own work that I'm doing with that around kind of healing my own stuff and the way that triggers me. I have to continue to go back and let go, you know, let go of the control and understand that I'm walking with them. And I loved what you said earlier, Esther, like asking them, like, who are you going to be? You know, not like, who am I shaping you to be, but who are you going to be? I'm like, Frig, that's good. And so then, yeah. And I mean, the most healing part is I imagine, you know, and Liz, you talked about this earlier too. I imagine the future. I imagine for them, even though I know life won't be perfect, I'm like, I just imagine that they can be in their bodies, that they can be them, that my two little boys can grow into them and feel things deeply and cry when they want to cry, you know, and laugh when they want to laugh and be the people that the creator of the cosmos wanted them to be, you know, without me interfering and trying to impose some sort of particular framework on them.
So good. Well, Matt, that is so powerful. What you just said, I imagine if that same future for my own kids, you know, even as old as they are. And so I guess people are probably going to want to know where they can find you and perhaps how they can get some mentoring from you, and that you will walk probably gently and kindly alongside of them as well. Where can they do that?
Yes, they can find me on my website, which is www.mattshantz.org. There's a connect button on there, so it's nice and easy to just shoot me an email. I'm also on Instagram at shantzmatt. You can find me there. It's a lot of Matt Shantzes, so. But yeah, those are the two places I'm sprinkled in a couple other places. But if you want to get a hold of me, then I would suggest either of those platforms.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Deconstructing Mamas podcast. We love that you tuned in and hope that this gave you a little bit of grace and space for your soul to breathe.
Don't forget to catch up on any of our episodes that you missed. And remember to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Deconstructing Mamas.
That's where you'll find all the information that you need about the podcast, as well as on our website, deconstructingmamas.com. You can also sign up for our weekly newsletter when you get there.
If you'd like to support the podcast, join our Patreon network for just $3 a month and have access to our private community with all kinds of extras. Leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts or just tell others about the show.
Thanks for listening and come back again for our next episode. We can't wait to be on the other side of your headphones.